This is the Gambling Gauchos.
If you've got a hot take for us or a question or a comment, anything else, go ahead and get in the queue. We'll get to as many as we can, as always. And try to have a good time on a Wednesday night after an 0-8 start in Big 12 play. Barnett, Howard & Williams, bhwlawfirm.com. They hope you never need them, but they're here for you if you do. They handle all sorts of cases, catastrophic injury, criminal defense, certified in Title IX, student litigation, whatever you need, bhwlawfirm.com. Where do y'all want to start? It looked decent in the first half. And then what we've seen happen over and over this season, a poor second half, the team apparently being behind in terms of adjustments, scheme. I know there's other factors. Pop got hurt, wasn't playing that well even before the injury. A lot to unpack here, Rob. Where do you want to start with this?
I was listening on the radio on my way home from calling a high school game. And I just want to give you one of Jeff Haxton's calls. You ready? Dribbling, 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 18-footer. No good. That was a Texas Tech
offensive. Yeah, that sounds about right.
That was a Texas Tech offensive possession.
Sounds about right. And that's a shame because Hax knows how to call an exciting play.
Oh, yeah.
I know we have bigger concerns than that, but Hax is pretty good when there's a guns up three ball or an alley-oop or a nice assist, but we're not giving him much of that to call these days. 0-10 against quad one or quad two opponents. Now, I'd be lying if I said I know the exact parameters of quad one and quad two, but more or less, that's teams with a pulse. Those are schools that are not a directional low major, mid-major. So you're 0-10 against teams that have anywhere near comparable resources that you do. And that's just really bad because even if you're a bad team, the way probability shakes out, if you've got a 20% chance to win a game 10 times in a row, you ought to at least luck your way into one or two of those. So to be 0-10 is just – and I know people have – I call it excuses or reasons. Like, oh, the team is young. Fardaws is hurt. Pop got hurt in this one. Like, okay, but at some point you're 0-10, And, there has to be some sort of reckoning for that and just an acknowledgement that there is a problem. And we can debate the – specifics of what the problem is or what the problems are and how severe they are. But I mean, there was a point in the season, Rob, where I didn't feel like we were very good. And a large swath of the fan base was really not even willing to acknowledge that anything was wrong. They were sure that we were just one more game away from turning a corner or one injury away from turning the corner. And if that's the case, it hasn't happened yet.
Do you know how many road wins that West Virginia has in Big 12 play since February of 2021?
Was this their first?
Yes.
Awesome. Love that. Okay, well, I'm sure we'll have more thoughts later. Mr. Root is in the house, requested to speak. What do you got for us, Mr. Root?
Well, I was going to hit you with that. West Virginia's last road Big 12 win was at TCU in 2021, tidbit. So,
my bad.
Great job, Mark Adams, for getting Bob Huggins his first road win in 700-plus days. Congratulations. Like to see that. One question. My birthday is in 2 weeks from tomorrow. Do you think Texas Tech will have a win? Or will I turn 32 before Tech gets another win? They might win against LSU because they are legitimately dog crap. But, I mean, it's just very unfun basketball to watch right now.
Yeah, certainly unfun. I think they can beat LSU. I thought they could beat West Virginia. I thought they could beat Oklahoma. I thought they could beat a lot of these teams they played. So, The only thing you can do is go and keep out and play him, right? I mean, there's nothing else we can do as fans. You just kind of have to watch the team play, and if they win, they win. If they don't, we'll keep watching, I guess.
One more thing. Remember to go watch the Lady Raiders on Saturday at 2 o'clock. They're playing Baylor, and I believe the 30th anniversary national championship team is going to be there. So, you know, let's support the ladies.
I believe all alumni, Lady Raider alumni, are invited, but they're going to honor the 30th anniversary team.
Yeah, correct.
Is Krista Gerlich going to be there, do you know, from that 1993 team?
I believe she's
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I wonder what kind of pants he's going to wear.
Rob, over under that Krista Gerlich is there on Saturday?
Over. Let's get to another speaker.
Hey, I thought our uniforms looked good. Maybe we could have some uniform discourse as well to lighten the mood. Before we do that, let's get to Desert Boy.
Howdy, guys. Yeah, you mentioned probability from, like, Tech's perspective. There's just a chance, even if we are bad, we should get a dub here and there. But that's not really how probability works. There's also the chance that teams that are worse than us get a dub. So I think that's kind of what we're seeing right now. I think we're getting really close in games that against actual Final Four contenders, obviously not tonight and versus Iowa State. But we can still make the tourney. I think 5 wins in the Big 12 and maybe a win in the Big 12 tourney gets us into March.
It does, and I love your optimism, but the math says 7 wins in the Big 12. 7. And that's the low end.
Is the CBI still a tournament?
Yeah, but you have to pay to go, and I don't think they will.
I think even 7 wins is, like you said, Rob, low end, and that sort of assumes that you've got a legit non-con record, and we don't have that. And so, and I was thinking about that during the game. I was like, you know what? If this is a rebuilding year and you go 6-12, okay. But to go 6-12, you have to finish 6-2. And in this – no, sorry. You'd have to finish – help me out with the math here. 6-4, which if you go 6-4 against teams in this conference, that's really good. I mean, that would be, I don't want to say miraculous, but that would be a really good 10-game stretch if you finish 6-4 in Big 12 play. And that's just to get to 6-12. But there's a difference between a rebuilding year where you go 6-12 and just like the wheels coming off and you go 2-16 or something. And I fear that's what we're staring down the barrel of right now.
Thanks for chiming in, Desert Boy. Is this a burrito with a scope? I think we're a form or something. Come in.
Yes, sir. That's me. I'm a huge fan of the pod. I appreciate you letting me speak. You know, my roommate and I were deliberating over, you know, what are our shortcomings, and we were thinking about what a successful model looks for a Texas Tech basketball team. You go on there and you look at the most recent team, and you see length and experience, you know? I mean, if we started 10 different starting fives throughout the year, you know, 8 of those probably had dudes where everybody was over 6'6", right? And then just experience, man. I mean, we're just some young pups out there. We're definitely going to get better. But I'd just say those are the two shortcomings that we can think of right now.
Yes,
sir. It's definitely a different type of personnel than you had last season where you were just cloning 6'6 athletic dudes that could defend the perimeter. I mean, you had Davion Warren, Adonis Arms, Shannon McCullough, all just kind of like rotating in and out.
I mean, even guys like Ogbo, you know, your three deep guys, I mean, they were still lengthy. They're longer than what we have this year.
So I do see Jackson. Jackson, if you want to speak, go for it. I know you sort of have some thoughts and you've compiled a lot of information on the youth of this team. It is a young team, but it's not that much of a delta versus the rest of the conference.
No, I wouldn't say the conference has changed that much either.
Yeah, I think Jackson found that – I think we're the youngest team in terms of, like, minutes played by dudes that, you know, have fewer than 3 years of experience. But it's by, like, 1% of minutes played, and, like, teams 9, 8, and 7 in that same metric are not that – not that far off from us. Jackson, do you have those numbers ready?
He's still getting them, man.
Jackson?
He's pulling them up. He's getting them.
Oh, okay. He's still muted right now. We're we're waiting with there great anticipation.
Nope, he's gone. He tried.
All right. In the meantime,
yeah.
Let's get to Big Hen, see what Big Hen has to say.
Appreciate y'all having me on. Thank
Absolutely,
you.
Absolutely, man.
Didn't mean to interrupt. But
you're good. Yourself. Thanks for the thoughts.
Yeah. What's up, guys? I'm in my bathroom again, so the echo. First of all, this loss is on me, 100%. I'm owning it, putting it on my shoulders. It was too much. It was Big Hen Day in the Discord. It was too much about me, wasn't enough about the team. That's on me. Second off, this is why you bet. This is why you emotional hedge. I nailed it, 2-0 on the under and West Virginia plus 3.5. But yeah, it was that was a rough game. I turned it off with like 6 minutes left because I just would rather watch White Lotus at this point. So hopefully they get it turned around, but I at this point I doubt it.
Have you been in the bathroom since 6 minutes remaining?
I mean, I live in bathrooms.
Okay,
I live and die in bathrooms.
That is true. So. You work there. You earn your money in a bathroom, and
yeah.
This emoji off in the chat is killing me. By the way,
hey,
nobody emojis harder than Briggs.
No, he does not.
I think Big Hen makes some good points though, because you know I was tweeting about the uniforms, which I liked them. And there were some quality responses to that saying, I don't care what we wear, let's just win the game. And that's a good point. Like, we were not focused enough on West Virginia tonight, and that showed. And so we need to do better as a fan base and make sure that we're just absolutely locked in on LSU and that all the tweets are laser focused. We don't need to be worrying about uniforms or memes or Big Hen puns. We just need to lock in on the Tigers and get off the snide here.
Couldn't agree more.
I, for one, enjoyed Big Hen Day and hope it turns into Big Hen Week, though.
As we can see, it doesn't end well. So I feel like, I don't know, maybe it's Root, Mr. Root Week or something. I feel like that's got to come next.
Well, I don't know if that'll happen. But
too much pressure. I can't do it.
Yeah. I mean, on the other hand, things couldn't get much worse no matter whose week it is. It looks like Maddie, Steven, and Briggs are downvoting Mr. Root Week. So I think that might have been vetoed.
All right, let's get to Drew. Drew, what's up, man?
Oh, sorry. What's up, guys?
How you doing?
Doing good. So I am not a Texas Tech fan. I am a KU fan. But I really enjoy your guys' content, and that's why I'm in here. I'm not trying to start anything.
Thank you.
I'm really surprised at how Tech season is going. I was pretty high on them going into the year. I thought they'd be one of the six, like, for sure tournament teams. And, you know, that was a really back and forth game down in Lubbock to start the Big 12 season that could have gone either way between KU and Tech. And I don't know, the fact that Tech's 0-8 just, like, really shocks me.
Yeah, it shocks me too. Can I counter with another question? How is Kevin McCullough doing? There was some tweets during the last game. Kansas themselves are on an 0-3 streak there. Lots of frustration. Juwan Harris, Kevin McCullough, are those guys struggling, or is it just kind of the fan base kind of reeling from an 0-3 run?
Well, it's a little bit of both. McCullough, the K-State game, didn't score. I remember texting one of my buddies that McCullough was being an absolute zero out there.
Yeah.
And I'm overall a big fan of him. I liked him at Texas Tech. Obviously, I like him now because he plays for my team. And then he got a steal, missed a layup, and then got fouled and missed both free throws. And then Bill Self left him in the game, and he fouled out. He was bad that game. He was okay against TCU, and that was a blowout. And then he had a double-double against Baylor. So I think he's fine. I just think the fan base kind of just splashes out.
Yeah. Well, it's hard not to. And again – 0-3 stretch for y'all, 0-8 stretch for Texas Tech. So I understand the fan base being frustrated.
Yeah, like he's had some bad games, but he also, like, he hit a big three against Wisconsin down in Battle for Atlantis, and we won that game by one. he made some big plays against Duke early in the year, and that was like a 3-point victory. So he's made some big plays. So I overall like him. I think some people, just because like he had entered his name in the draft and all this stuff, that people expected him to be like this actual like NBA level college player, and it's like he's a good role player. You'd agree with that, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
But I didn't expect too much from him.
I think that was kind of, I don't want to go way off topic here, but I think that was kind of the quote unquote issue at Texas Tech, was like he wanted to be a certain type of player. He wanted to be a true point guard, and that wasn't really his game. I mean, he was decent at that, but he would have been a lot better as just like a wing defender and then kind of carving out a different role on the offensive end of the floor. And so I guess he thought that, you know, Kansas would be a better offensive system for him or whatever. But yeah, I agree kind of on the type of player he is. Like he could be a really elite role player. I mean, even that term kind of, I think, probably diminishes it a little too much. Like if he's your fourth best starter, I think you have like a really good squad. If he wants to be like the number one or number two dude on the team, then I think you, you know, maybe have a little bit lower ceiling. But yeah, I'm surprised that Texas Tech has been this bad to start conference play. And, you know, I don't think Kansas has started bad. They're on a rough stretch the last three games, but I think more of that just speaks to how loaded the conference is top to bottom.
Yeah, definitely.
Cool. Well, good thoughts, man. Appreciate you joining. Rob, what else do you want to get to here?
Well, we got another speaker, Jordan. If you want to chime in, you can.
Yeah, I missed that.
Yeah, guys. Appreciate y'all having me on. But I was just kind of reaching out. I'm not on any of the boards, so this answer might be on there. But do you guys know what Steve Green does exactly? Because I feel like before the season started, we were kind of sold this pie-in-the-sky idea that he was bringing the Golden State Warriors offense to Tech. And it seems we're still doing the same three-man weave that we were doing when Chris Beard was here. So I'm not sure if y'all have any insight or have heard what he brings to the table.
Kyle, you want to take this one?
I was going to ask if you wanted to.
I will if you don't want to, but I don't know. I'll
try my best. I don't have like inside info, and like I wouldn't be able to tell you that, you know, during practice every week, Steve Green's role is X, Y, Z. I do think that it's pretty clear what we witness on the offensive end of the floor every game is not what his track record would, you know, kind of would lead you to believe that we would look like that. And I do think the whole Golden State Warriors thing, I think that was thrown out like once in an article in The Athletic, and everybody just like latched onto it and thought we were going to be the Golden State Warriors. But I think the broader point that you're kind of getting at is that both seasons Mark Adams has been at the helm, it does not appear that he allows his quote-unquote offensive coordinator, which is an unofficial title, but Barrett Perry last year, Steve Green this year, it doesn't appear that he allows them to kind of run the offense with freedom and to do what they're experts at doing. And whether that perception is accurate or not, fair or not, I think it's – I know with at least some amount of certainty it's accurate to some extent. I don't think Perry's departure was totally mutual. So anyway, yeah, I think it's fair to wonder if the head man in charge is not allowing the coaches he hires to run the offense to like really kind of do that to the greatest of their ability.
Gotcha.
And whether that's fair or not, the offense has not been great the last 2 years. And so like the buck has to stop somewhere. So even if what we've witnessed the last 2 years is 100% Barrett Perry's offense and 100% Steve Green's offense, it still speaks to maybe the head coach not identifying and attracting the right guy to run the offense. But I don't think that's the case for whatever it's worth.
Because we were doing some really cool stuff. I mean, I don't even know it's really cool, but it was really cool compared to what we normally run whenever Fardaz finally came back. With some high post action with him, which is different than what we normally do. But as soon as he gets subbed out, we go right back to the same three-man weave stuff that just makes your eyes bleed because they dribble for 18 seconds, then pop waste a three. But
well, yeah, and I'll say this too, real quick I think Bryson Williams was so good last year that he sort of masked a lot of your other deficiencies. Because, like, as a whole, the offensive stats weren't stellar last year, but when it was a big moment or to stop a drought or whatever, you just kind of, like, gave Bryson the ball, let him cook. And he would – it felt like about 95% of the time, go get a bucket whenever you needed one. And this year's team doesn't seem to have that same type of guy.
Yeah. I just have one more, point to make. But I think we're really going to see here down the stretch how good of a coach Mark Adams is, depending on if he's – switches away from his defensive scheme, because like one of the speakers earlier pointed out, our roster makeup is much shorter and different. And if we keep putting Bacho out there guarding the 3-point line and getting destroyed on the offensive boards because of our defensive scheme, it's going to be a very, very long season.
Yeah. You would think though, by the end of January, that change would have already been made if it was going to be made. We'll see,
true.
But an 0-8 start, you should be able to shake something loose before then.
Yeah, and I mean, I get that it's gotten him this far, but seeing Notre Dame figure it out in the tournament last year and just run screens until they get their point guard on, at that point, I think it was Silva. But, I mean, Mark Adams has been figured out, which hurts because I was happy whenever he got signed, but I think NCAA might have caught up to him and passed him.
Well, I mean,
I'll hop off now.
If him being figured out, and thanks, Jordan, we'll move on to Tyrell in a second, but if Mark Adams being figured out is just hit twice the amount of threes you normally hit, then yeah, he's been figured out. But
I mean,
again, I just don't think you have the talent this year, and that's roster makeup and that's roster management, but he's already said you need to get older, and you can't get older in the middle of a season.
I get that. And people are definitely hitting a ton of threes, but we're giving them a ton of open threes because they figured out to screen the backside defender in the paint.
Sure. No, I know what you're saying. I don't know that it's as – I don't know that it's that simple. I think there's more to it. And I think it's a little bit of a cop-out to just say, well, you know, just switch the scheme and you'll be better, because I don't think that's possible. And again, you practice a certain scheme and you practice playing a certain way. You can't just say, all right, we're going to run zone this game. It's not quite like, I don't know, in football where you can just say, all right, let's try the 4-man front this week. It's something that you have to practice and get good at and hone. And I don't think you can make that big of a switch in the middle of a season.
Gotcha. Cool. Thanks, guys.
People's Post Game, sponsored by Barnett, Howard, and Williams. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in and for your input, comments, questions. Loving the interaction here. We got several more speakers to get to. Rob, I don't ever want to call out anybody in these, but I do want to just extend like special invitations. Our good buddy Irrational, the king of West Virginia memes. If you want to hop in here, feel free. If you don't, that's okay too. I think Rob, we have a bunch of people who requested and I didn't approve them. I am going to add Ty first, and then we'll get to the others. Ty, what do you got for us?
Oh, hey, what's going on, y'all?
How you doing?
Not much, man. Just having fun on a Wednesday night.
Yeah, it's another great night. Not sure how many people here in the chat were around in 2011 and 2012. Dating myself a little bit here. That's when I went to school. We won 2 conference games, I believe, in 2012, but it was rough. The USA was so empty that I would actually like yell when the other team would be shooting free throws, because I knew my dad would be watching in the living room, and I'd be like, hey, Greg, are you watching? What's going on? And he could kind of hear me, like just faintly. But I hope we don't get to that point. It's unfortunate to see the stretch we're going to. I'm not going to hug the mic. I just did want to clear up one other little misconception I feel like I keep hearing a lot in the Twitter world, and that's that we're a young team. We're really about average as far as the NCAA is concerned, as far as our average age. O'Banner is not a spring chicken. DeMorian Williams is not a spring chicken. Neither is Davion Harmon. And Imok is also pretty old. So, I mean, I agree with Rob that it's not a situation where scheme change. I'm not sure I completely buy that we're super talented. To be honest, I think we just may have really swung and missed. on this transfer class, but I do think there's some promising young guns. But to say we're a young team, I don't think is quite accurate.
Good thoughts. I think I remember one of those wins in 2012 because I was walking across campus and heard the victory bells. And I remember thinking for a moment, like, what could that possibly be for? And then I was like, oh, we beat OU in basketball because Rob Lewandowski, who's like my cousin-in-law or something, I'm like somehow related to him. He went off.
I remember. Yeah,
we beat OU. So anyway,
you know what? To be honest, if it was in 2012, I was, you know, it was only my first full year in the saddle trap. So I probably, you know, we'd lost so much. I guarantee you that I did not have the privilege to be excused from the game early to go ring the victory bells that day. So I wish I could say that was probably me you heard. It almost certainly was not.
It's kind of sad when you win that infrequently that you can, like, pinpoint the opponent and, like, where you were when the victory bells were ringing.
We beat OU, I believe, in 2012. Yeah. It is very sad. Yes, I do remember 10 years ago we beat OU.
That's the one I'm thinking of.
And I was like, oh, holy mother of God, we did it. I can't. Everybody wake up.
Yeah. Well, good thoughts, Ty. I think we probably kind of agree with you on the youth. Like, you definitely have some young guys. But like I said earlier, I hope Jackson can chime in at some point. But he kind of had the breakdown on minutes played in conference play. When you look at it that way, it kind of shows that, like, we might be a little bit less inexperienced, but not so much to, like, explain away an 0-8 starting conference play.
Sure, no doubt. Not trying to make excuses there. There is definitely a factor of these guys just playing together. I think what's the most disturbing thing about tonight is just really, and you guys probably talked about it already because I came in a little bit late, but honestly, just getting your ass kicked on the boards the way we did is really disturbing for kind of what we have built this brand to be over the last few years. And, you know, I think a lot of that's Huggins should maybe get a little bit of credit. They kept getting our bigs out on the perimeter and just far away from the basket. So, you know, every time I would see a shot go up, I was like, oh, hell, we got Davion down there trying to – is he going to box out and grab this board? We got all of our smaller guys down there. So, I mean, part of that's just not adjusting and getting our bigs not in positions to get boards, but some of it you're just kind of getting out-hustled. And, you know, I think it's that and just still the same kind of poor off-ball movement. The screens we set are really uninspiring. They're not providing much resistance for the guy who has the ball. It's just it's rough. I don't want to make everybody feel sad with just more bad news. So I won't comment on the uniforms, but I'll let someone else talk. But always good to chat with you all and you know, try to keep your heads up.
Yeah.
Thanks, Ty.
Well, thank you for the thoughts, Ty. I'm glad you're out of Twitter jail. All right, let's get to Irrational and see what he's got to say from a Mountaineer fan's perspective. How's it going, man?
Hey, how are y'all doing?
Pretty good.
Yeah, about as good as you can after watching that.
Yeah, he's the moonshine.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was a tough one for both teams. That's what I was going to say. My biggest problem with Big 12 basketball this year is just, I don't know, it seems like the refs just slow the pace down, and it just is almost unbearable to watch sometimes the way they call it. You don't know how it's going to go, but I know we were in the same boat as you guys where – just a lot of losses, and I know it can be daunting, but that's how the Big 12 is. Just so tough.
Well, I think you guys are still in an okay spot. I mean, obviously it's gonna be hard to climb the standings too much, but I think going into the night, y'all's net ranking was like 28 or 29.
Yeah.
So if y'all can scrape together 7 or 8 Big 12 wins, I think y'all still might get in. And
yeah,
it would be so brutal if, I mean, I want the Big 12 to be like a 9-bid league. That'd be awesome. But if we're the only school that's at home while everybody else is dancing, that'll be a little bit tough.
Yeah, for sure. And that's what the announcer said during the game. If we were – both of us were in the Pac-12, we'd be automatic. We already be in the tournament. Just the Big 12 is so stacked, like someone's got to be left out on – but
yeah, the non-con helps for sure because I think you're a 12 seed if the season ended today according to like Hoops HD and some of the services that you use. So.
Yeah, the computers love us still for some reason, even after all these losses. But
that's good.
Y'all finally got the best basketball we've played in a while because it's been poor free throw shooting, the beginning of the game, that's how we usually look for the entire game. We finally got some turnovers cleaned up and actually was making some shots, even if they were banks. But
yeah, I was frustrated at those.
Yeah,
especially if y'all had won by like 4 or 5 with those 2 bank shots. They need to like change the rules. That shouldn't count. It should be like, have to call it, you know?
Yeah.
But anyway, I think, Morgantown is such a tough place to play for everyone else in the Big 12, just because it's, you know, different time zone. You got to travel pretty far. So hopefully y'all can get some home wins and scrape up enough of a resume to get into the tournament. Like I said, I'm pretty much rooting for as many teams as possible to go. Yeah,
same here. That's how I feel. Big 12 supremacy. But I appreciate y'all let me talk, and I appreciate all y'all's content and Twitter. Y'all, the best Big 12 Twitter account out there. So
yeah, hey, keep it up with the memes.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right, Rob, who's next?
Let's pull Alex in. Alex, how you doing, man?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
A local legend.
I figured, I haven't talked to some of y'all in a while, so glad to chime in here. Kind of wanted to piggyback off what Ty was talking about earlier. And everybody's mentioned it, but clearly the Big 12 is a gauntlet. Like, even the worst team in it is going to be good. It's just you have to play that schedule night in and night out. But the one thing that has been kind of keeping us, you know, in the conversation and then in the tournament talk for years is that you defend your home. You know, you win your home games as many as you can. You sneak out 1 or 2 on the road. You know, even last year, obviously undefeated season at home, but they only took, I think, 3 wins on the road. So you don't expect to be able to pull those off, but at least you know, with the energy and everything kind of surrounding the home game, you play up to that challenge. And we've seen that every year, whether it's the returners or the newbies, like you're saying, Bryson coming in, and you know, you just knew he had that clutch gene, and it was a lot of fun. But you know, I watched the game. I heard the crowd. It sounded loud, despite the fact that clearly it's not the best start. Like, the fans aren't giving up. The student section doesn't seem to be giving up, but it seemed like the players kind of gave up there. You know, I know there were a couple unlucky threes that banked in, and you know, I know it's a little disheartening, but it seemed like the guys on the court gave up faster than the guys in the crowd. And I think that's one of the things that really needs to kind of curb, is you don't want to see it, you know, like Ty mentioned, where you can hear one guy yelling from the crowd. I think they've built up such a good home court that, you know, the fans have to be respected for that. I just want to make sure that these guys aren't taking it for granted, and that they're going out there, and even if they're down 10, they're still showing some heart.
Yeah, that's tough, and I think it's fair criticism. Raider Riot, I see them listening in, and I know you had experience there at the USA playing the music, I think, but the atmosphere that's been built is really good, and I think it'll be sustained through the student section, but I don't know how much longer. I mean, you look at the rest of the USA, it's fairly empty, especially late in that second half when West Virginia kind of extended. So I know that on TV it's always going to sound loud because of that student section. I think Raider Riot's done a great, great job. But yeah, I think you do run the risk, if you're not playing hard throughout, to have a strong home court advantage the rest of the season with maybe some season ticket holders or just kind of the local yokels that want to go up there to catch a basketball game, me included.
Yeah, and you know that, like, obviously Texas is still going to be Texas. Like, you're still going to get the crowd and all that stuff. But, yeah, I mean, this is Western. This is the second, no offense to ear over here, like, this is the team you're supposed to be able to beat at home. Like, Georgetown isn't supposed to win any Big East games, except for DePaul comes there and they finally have a chance. And it's really hard to kind of buy into this team. Like, I don't blame anyone talking negatively right now, just because it's hard knowing that from here on out, every game is going to be statistically harder to win than this one. But, you know, what can you really do? You just kind of got to keep your support and just keep hoping for the best and hope somehow one of these games ends up going your way.
Yeah, good thoughts all around, and that is kind of, I mean, I guess maybe we could save this conversation for after the season, but one of the more disappointing parts of having a down year like this, I knew we weren't gonna like continue the home win streak for forever,
But now to lose, I think, three straight Big 12 games, OU, Baylor, four in a row because Kansas was also at the USA. It feels like it's kind of lost some of the magic from last season. And the Raider Riot, to your point, still doing a great job. I mean, students seem into it. They're still doing, like, the theme nights. Tonight was Jersey night. And, you know, so it seems like they're still very engaged and active, which is awesome to see. But, yeah, like to Rob's point, you kind of lose the more quote-unquote casual fan. And I don't mean that in a derogatory way. And I probably fall into that category, you know, not living in Lubbock anymore. I can go back on the weekends and go to the game or, you know, choose not to drive 4 or 5 hours. And, you know, when you're undefeated at home and in the top 15, you know, that it compels people to show up. But when they're having a season like this and, you know, that feeling starts to sink in of, well, this isn't a very consequential game, then, you know, people are like, well, I'll just, you know, go watch my nephew's soccer game or, you know, clean out the attic, you know, do something like that instead. So that part is kind of sucked, but I think it'll take far more than just like one down year to just lose the home court atmosphere that you've built up over the years. And it's good to see. I think that starts and ends with the student section and the Raider Riot. So as long as they're still there, I think it can turn around as soon as the performance on the court does as well.
All right, let's try to grab Jackson. Then we have Casey, Real TJ Otts, and Texas Tech Championship after that. So let's hit Jackson.
Hey, can you hear me now?
We got you.
Yes, sir.
What kind of, what kind of saloon door are you coming
through?
Was
that the saloon door closing behind you?
Yeah, pretty much. but, yeah, I mean, we're really not that young of a team. I mean, we're obviously the youngest team in the Big 12. But if you look at the breakdown by our roster, I mean – Kansas, on average, they have like 2.9, 4 years of experience out there, and we're less than a tenth under that. And pretty much with Baylor, too, in freshman minutes, and with Kansas, they're both top four or bottom four with us in freshman 3+ years or 4+ years of experience. So I kind of feel like the experience things pretty much is overblown, especially with Tyson and Isaacs are probably two of our best players.
I think it's one thing when people say you're a young team. I think it's another thing when people say you're inexperienced. Because Baylor has a lot of experience together, especially Flagler and some of these guys that have been there, Flo Thamba. Kansas has 3 or 4 guys that have been there and are, you know, competing. Kevin McCullough in the Big 12 has been competing. You have some new... Even your older guys, AMAC's not been in the Big 12. Damarian Williams has not been in the Big 12. Kerwin Walton has not been in the Big 12. So you're inexperienced together, and you're one of the younger teams. And I think it's more of the and than just one or the other.
Yeah, I mean, I'd agree with that. But a big part of that has to fall on Adams for not being able to keep Wilson, Nadolny, McCullough, or Shannon. Or even Agbo, who's doing pretty well at Boise.
Certainly. And I think roster management and roster makeup is one of the main things that Kyle and I have been talking about. If you want to blame it on the recruiting staff, you want to blame it on Adams. I know we're all trying to find somebody to blame at 0-8, but that's certainly one of the issues on this team.
Isn't TJ doing like 18-6 at Illinois? I mean, that stings.
And then K-State loses Nigel Pack, and he's scoring like 6 less points a game at Miami.
But even guys, like, I don't want to beat this horse to death, but on our last episode we talked about guys that were already in the program and played at a certain level last year, not only haven't improved but have, like, markedly regressed. And so it's not even a matter of, like, oh, if those transfers would have stayed, then, you know, this would have happened or that would have happened. Like, the guys that stayed in your program and you should be developing, should be a year faster, stronger, wiser, you know, put up tens of thousands more shots in the offseason, are, like, not as good at basketball as they were last year. And so that is a concern. It's not just recruiting. It's also player development. So, Casey, I think you were next, and then we'll get to the real TJ Otzelberger.
Yeah, what's up, guys?
So, I was just going to ask y'all's opinion on if y'all think we'll be able to keep any of these guys. So, I know it's early and a lot will happen from now until next year, but assuming we don't turn it around, like, what are y'all's thoughts on being able to keep some of our key players? Like, I know people leave, and that's part of it, especially with the transfer portal, but I think it would be huge to at least have an idea of what we'll be working with next year. Like, I think it would be positive to retain guys like Pop, Tyson, and Fisher, and then you'll have Lindsay and Steffi joining the team as well next year. So I'm just curious on y'all's thoughts on our progress towards potentially keeping any of these guys.
Yeah, it's natural at 0-8 to start thinking about next year, but it's impossible. It really is. I would say, based on the past 2 years, you will be replacing at least 50% of the team. And I don't know what that looks like and where it comes from, but it would be impossible for me to say a certain guy is returning or not returning.
Right.
But yeah, I understand the question.
Yeah, and I noticed Fisher has taken down, like, his tech post, and, you know, he skipped his senior year of high school, and he's young, so it would be great to have a guy of his talent join the team again next year. But, yeah, I was just wondering if y'all had any thoughts, but, yeah, you're right. Guess it is a little early.
I mean, even in a really good year last season, you lost some of your best players who still had eligibility remaining. So I think part of it is just the world of college athletics now. There's guaranteed with absolute certainty going to be some turnover. It's just a matter of how much. And so, yeah, to Rob's point, I mean, there's almost no way to know on individual players, but I think hopefully the mindset is, you know, guys that you think have a high ceiling that just need more time in the program, maybe like an Elijah Fisher, hopefully guys like that are back. And then also guys like Bacho that, you know, aren't ready to go play at the next level, but after this season are going to have some pretty legitimate minutes and experience in the Big 12. You know, he'd be a key piece coming back. So, you know, I think basically what I'm saying is you just hope to minimize the damage in the portal, but you're not going to avoid it altogether in today's world.
Yeah, for sure. I think it'd be huge for next year to keep some of those guys that I listed.
Yeah. Good thoughts, Casey. Let's get to Real TJ Altelberger, then we'll go to the Texas Tech Championships.
What's up, guys? Just wanted to say I watched a little bit at the very end tonight. You know, I took my bet away tonight after I saw AMAC was out, which was kind of – I had no idea until 20 minutes before tip-off. But, you know, going back to kind of what Casey said, you know, you see what Kansas State's doing right now. Iowa State did this too, you know, bringing TJ last year, you know, going to the tournament after a 2-22 season. Teams can have a bad year and then rebound really quickly, especially with the transfer portal.
Yeah, I guess that's the upside to today's era. Like, it's hard to sustain a team and sustain chemistry, but also, yeah, you can go from dreadful to like a top 10 team in the country. Like, I mean, like Iowa State has shown in 2 years, Kansas State in 1 year under Jerome Tang. So yeah, I think that's the part that gives you hope, is if you can nail some evals in the transfer portal and turn the roster over like in a good way, you can be right back to top of the Big 12 very quickly. You know, it's not like that in football with an 85-man roster. You pretty much have to build that over 2 or 3 years minimum, even with the portal. But basketball, yeah, I mean, you can get three dudes out of the portal and totally changes the team dynamic. So I guess that is the upside, is like, even if, let's say, Tech goes 0-18, which I don't think that'll happen, but I mean, yeah, they could flip the switch in the offseason pretty quickly in today's era of college basketball. So I guess that is a silver lining to a season like this.
And then I just wanted to hear what your thoughts were on the Big 12 SEC Challenge this weekend. In my opinion, I think it's just terrible to do it during the middle of the season. I don't think any of the Big 12 teams really care that much, maybe outside of Kansas, Kentucky, about what happens this weekend. You know, like me, I could care less about, you know, we're going to Missouri on Saturday. So, I mean, I would say they're probably not going to win. Caleb Grills probably, if I were odds, I'd probably just sit him and then play him against you guys on Monday, which which was huge that we got that win on yesterday against K-State, because you lose that one, and then you more than likely you might lose on Saturday. That Tech game becomes all of a sudden really big, and, you know, that game isn't going to be easy. So,
well, thanks for saying it's not going to be easy. I appreciate that. Big Monday is always crazy. I would love for the Big 12 SEC Challenge to not be in the middle of the season, but it is. I think there's some really good matchups. And I think if you're the Big 12, you need to have a good weekend, especially if you want eight teams in the tournament. I know one weekend does not change. And it's kind of talked about as how the Big 12 is this gauntlet and it's the best conference in the world. And then the SEC Big 12 Challenge last 2 years, the SEC has won. So I think there's some good matchups. Tennessee, Texas is a great matchup. Baylor, Arkansas, even though Arkansas is not doing as well this year, that's a great matchup. TCU should beat Mississippi State by 30. Kansas State should beat Florida by 30. Ole Miss, Oklahoma State might end up being a good game. Texas Tech, LSU should be pretty even. So I think there's some good matchups in that. And it should be a good weekend of basketball. And I love that, you know, it's 11, 1, 1, 1, 3, 3, 5, 5, 7, 7. So you're going to have it all day long too.
Yeah, and then my last thing was, who in the Big 12 are you buying the most stock of right now? Because, you know, after watching K-State up and close last night, that's the best team we've played all year. And I know Kansas fans, or we lost to Kansas, but that is the best team we've played all year up close and personal.
I think if I was buying stock in one team, it would be Kansas State. But TCU, I'm still intrigued by TCU, and obviously Iowa State would be right there with those three. I think those three teams are really intriguing. Texas, Baylor would be next, and then Kansas, I think, is sixth right now in the conference, which is crazy. Kyle, do you have
anything
to thought
there? Yeah, I love to go for the value picks, and I think Baylor is sixth right now in the futures odds to win the conference, and I don't think they'll do that. But if we're using that as a power ranking, I think they're better than the sixth place team in this conference, and so I would buy stock in Baylor based on their current price point.
I would too. I think that the three teams that I really like right now is, you know, I really like TCU. I think they started off, they struggled early on, but boy, they are explosive on offense, especially in transition. And then I really like this Baylor team too. You know, they've won five straight after starting 0-3. And then Kansas State, it's just hard not to – they're just so good offensively. You know, they're just not very big. The one thing that kills K-State is they're just not very big inside.
Yeah, that's certainly a hole in their roster. And you mentioned it with TCU. They're just so explosive in transition. And they're old. And we talk about the youth and inexperience with Texas Tech. They're old, man. They all played together before. TCU and Kansas State and Iowa State all have that kind of connection. Baylor, too. And Texas. And Kansas. I mean, you look at the top six teams in the conference, they all have age and experience. So, yeah, tough. And it's, you know, from the outside looking in right now with Texas Tech being the 10th team in the conference. So if I was to place a futures bet on the Big 12 champion, Iowa State, Kansas State would be up there. But I still like TCU. They just have to be consistent down the stretch. And I don't know that I trust Jamie Dixon as much as I trust that roster.
And with the Big 12 being so, you know, we can tell who the top six teams are, but I just think what's going to separate the top six teams is who can take care of, you know, the Oklahoma States, the Oklahomas, the Techs, and the West Virginias. Who's going to take care of those teams on the road, and, you know, who's going to fight the top of the league?
Yeah, and at this point, I just want to play spoiler, right?
Yeah, I think that's like basically the role you're going to have to play. Like somebody's going to drop a home game to Tech or West Virginia at like a really inopportune time for their either conference title aspirations, their seeding aspirations. And, it does kind of sound cliche, but like this conference is just stacked enough to do that. Like I know Tech fans think that we're this like terrible basketball team, but we're probably still one of the I don't know, we're probably still in the top, like, what, 25-30% of Division I programs. And so that's not dreadful. Like everybody else has made the point, well, you'd be middle of the pack in the Pac-12 or ACC or whatever. And so, yeah, I think you could potentially play spoiler, and hopefully we play spoiler to the teams that we dislike the most and not our dear friends up in Ames. Okay, Tiny Hippo, I think you are next. Speaking of our dear friends in Ames, he's got the bridge as his cover photo. But he's like the quintessential Iowa State fan.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I gotta rep my school, but love you guys' content, love you guys' fans. I know I was talking with Ty earlier today and a couple other Texas Tech fans here on Twitter, and you know, it's kind of sad to see where Texas Tech is at now. I'm shocked by it. I didn't expect to see it. I expected to see you guys top half easily. And so, from my perspective, I guess if you guys had to pick out like matchups that you think you can take that aren't, I mean, you got Oklahoma State twice. I want you guys to beat Texas. I'm sure you all echo that sentiment. And I look at the schedule and I'm like, where do they pick up wins? Where can this team, you know, make a push here late in the season? I want to hear your guys' thoughts on that.
Yeah, I do think we were discussing the home atmosphere earlier. I think that'll definitely pick up for the Texas game. And, you know, honestly, we were should have beat them in Austin. I mean, I think we had at one point an 11 or 12 point lead around the half. And just completely squandered it in the second half, which has been a theme this year. But I think that'd be a potential home court victory opportunity. I think Oklahoma State, like you mentioned, even OU, even though that return trip is in Norman, they have a great home court advantage. I don't know. I mean, part of it sort of depends on where the team's mindset is at. Like, they were very competitive with TCU and Texas the first time around, but that was when they had the entire season in front of them. And so, I don't know. It could be a totally different team the next time they face those opponents that they played well against for 25, 30 minutes at a time. But those would be a few that I would, I guess, identify as our best opportunities to notch some wins before the season ends.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense to me. And just to echo Real TJ's point, even if you guys did miss on transfers this year, the whole market has just shifted. It seems like you can build a roster straight through that transfer portal and compete that next year. I know you mentioned Iowa State as one of the more experienced teams and has played together, but that wasn't the case last year. That team was assembled out of nowhere. And so now they've played together, but last year that wasn't the case. That was a Sweet 16 team. Some lucky matchups in March Madness, I'll concede, and that was a team that you guys absolutely embarrassed in Kansas City, if I recall. Embarrassed a couple times. So.
Yeah, and to your point, Iowa State won, what, 7 Big 12 games, and a lot of them were really late. They struggled mightily early. So, I mean, it was, but they came together at the end, and you're right, it was a 30-point loss in the Big 12 tournament, and then they turned around and went to the Sweet 16. So I'm not ruling anything out, but certainly discouraged at 0-8. Thanks for your thoughts there, Tiny Hippo.
Yeah, you guys have a good night.
For sure. Texas Tech Championships, what's up, man?
Sorry, my space is spazzed out earlier. I'm just wondering how you guys think this will play out at the end of the season with Kirby Hocutt and Dusty Womble, and I'm just curious how you think it's going to go.
Rob, I'll let you go first.
Well, it's already kind of getting warm, yeah, with Dustin Womble talking in a couple of boards and some public comments. Other boosters have had public comments. And
can you speak to that? I actually haven't seen that. What are you referring to?
There was a comment where I guess Dustin Womble on Red Raider Sports was like, "Hey, here I am. I've changed my handle, so you can know what I'm saying." And he didn't call for a job or anything, but he's just being more public on some comments. I don't remember exactly what he said, but it was striking because if there are comments or anything else being publicized, and it wasn't too negative. It's just if it's public now, something's going on, right? And I don't want to try to read into it, but I will say this. Kirby Hokut is going to have a really tough decision if Mark Adams is 0-18 in the Big 12. If they can finish strong and win 4 or 5,
I don't think that's a tough decision. I think that's a slam dunk. I mean, that's already decided if that happens.
Well, yeah, but it's still a tough decision to fire a coach in year two. And I do agree that if he's 0-18, it makes it an easier decision. But I think it's semantics saying it's not a tough decision, especially for a guy like Mark Adams, a guy from Brownfield, a Texas Tech grad. I think it would be a tough decision for those guys, but.
It would also be Kirby admitting that the extension he gave him a calendar year prior was stupid. And so
I was looking at that contract, by the way, and it's only 60% guaranteed. So it would only be $6 million.
I mean, we say only $6 million. I think that's what we paid to fire Cliff. And, you know, the football coach makes substantially more than the basketball coach. Of course, I'm not pitching in for the buyout. So if somebody else wants to pay $6 million, it's not coming out of my wallet. But
I just don't think there's enough perception to
just like brush it aside and say, oh, they can easily. I mean, they could, but it'll have to take like a lot of conviction to do it, I think.
No, I'm just saying there's not. I don't want people to think that there's like a 7-year, $20 million contract around our neck or something like that.
Yeah, I got you.
It's not the buyout though. It's the admittance that you're wrong. And there's still ego involved. It's not the money.
You want to know what I think, how this will play out?
Sure, go ahead.
I think it's going to come down to the guys that run the Matador Club, because if I run the Matador Club and I'm Dusty Womble, and what matters is the NIL now, like the guy just said, you can rebuild your roster with NIL in a year. If he goes to Kirby and says, we're not funding Tech athletics or basketball next year for NIL purposes. I mean, that's what matters.
The Matador Club isn't running the basketball NIL, and Dusty Womble is not a part of the Matador Club. But I agree with you're saying. There's some thought process there. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, it's an interesting hypothetical, and that's where going back. I don't know how early you got in the spaces. Kind of one of those differences between a 6-12 campaign and a 2-16 campaign. Like, one of those you can chalk it up to like, okay, yeah, we were rebuilding, we had some injuries, whatever. And then the other is like just a dreadful, almost inexcusable performance. So, you know, the games don't matter in the sense of like NCAA tournament seeding or anything like that, but they might matter from that perspective in terms of what happens after the season ends. Quick shout out, not only to our sponsors, Barnett, Howard, and Williams, but also to Mateo Nomeo. Love you, man. Reckham, I think you're next, and then we'll go to Carson.
Yes, with everybody saying that the seat's hot for Adams and all that, who do all these people expect to bring in? You know, like, what are the hot names out there? I mean, you don't really hear anybody dropping any names that they want to bring in. They just want Adams gone.
So that's a fair question to ask, because, yeah, if you fire the head coach, you obviously have to replace him with somebody else. But weren't we telling everybody after Beard left what an attractive job this was, and that we had the greatest fan base, we had the greatest facilities, home court advantage, that you could recruit to Lubbock. Now we have the NIL infrastructure that I think a lot of other Power 5 schools would envy. When Beard was here and winning, he was making top 5, top 10 money. And so I think it's an attractive job. I don't think at all that we'd be in a position where if we fired Mark Adams, we wouldn't be able to lure a highly competent and attractive head coach to the job. As far as specific names, I guess I probably haven't thought that far. I think maybe a guy like Talvin Hester would be considered. I'm not saying Jerome Tang, but a guy like Jerome Tang, who's been a top assistant in this league for a long time and, you know, is known to be a good recruiter. I think they could look to kind of copy that hire. I mean, it worked for the Texas Tech football program. It's clearly working for Kansas State basketball. So I think you'd have a lot of options, and I think that it would be an attractive job should it come open.
Agreed. What's up, Carson?
Well, and to add to that, I was going to say another name you could start looking at is a Richard Pitino type name like that. Look what he's doing in New Mexico. He's got them ranked in the top 25 in a job that really over the years, I mean, obviously you have one of the coolest arenas there in New Mexico, but that's a tough job to recruit to Albuquerque. Is pretty much, people say it's hard to recruit to Lubbock. It's just like recruiting to Lubbock if you're recruiting to Albuquerque. Almost probably harder.
Are
you saying it's all West Texas?
Yes. Richard Pitino's in New Mexico?
Yeah, he's at UNM.
Is this his first year? Because he just got fired at Minnesota, yeah?
2 years ago, yeah.
Okay, all right.
But you know what he's done in New Mexico, obviously, that's what I'm saying. If he can do that in New Mexico, then if you're trying to get a big name, a guy that has name recognition and keep with that kind of stuff, then there's a name right there. He's got a team in the top 25 that they haven't been great in the last few years, and they've been middle of the Mountain West. So throwing names out, you know, it's way too early to do all those things, but I just saw them playing earlier this week, and it's like, okay, Richard Pitino's actually winning basketball games now. Okay. But anyways, what I was going to say is, and I just got into the spaces, so I'm sure y'all have probably already gone over this, but the transfer portal, the way that everything's done now, the way that you build teams, doing all these things. I mean, you look at this Texas Tech roster, it's all transfer portal guys plus some freshmen that have come in and have played good minutes for you, and Pop Isaacs and Jalen Tyson and those guys. And obviously Jalen's a kind of pseudo redshirt freshman for what it's worth. But the transfer portal, sometimes this is just going to happen. You're going to get guys in who have talent. There's no arguing that this roster has talented dudes on it. But whether those guys can come in and give you the kind of team that you want to have is all going to be dependent upon the year, because you're going to see this happen a lot. I think the next few, however long the transfer portal stays alive in college athletics, especially in basketball, because it's such, you know, the teams are 10 guys, 12 guys deep. And if you're going to pull from that transfer portal and bring in most of your guys every single year, along with 3 or 4 freshmen from the transfer portal and have new rosters, you're going to have to find ways to help them gel better. And sometimes they gel, like last year and the last couple of years where it's happened and it's all gelled together really well, where you've had good pieces coming back. But I think that's what Texas Tech missed, is you have Kevin O'Banner, who's the only guy who played a ton of minutes for you last year. He came back. Is he the kind of leader you needed? Some people thought he could be, but obviously he's not. So those are the kind of problems you run into right now in the transfer portal. I think you're seeing a lot of that this year, and obviously the stuff with Mark Adams and the coaching staff turnover and whatever the turmoil is there is kind of a secondary to that. But I think the transfer portal, this sometimes just not going to go the way you want it to. And right now for Texas Tech fans, unfortunately, it's your year for that to happen. That's just the sad reality of it.
It's been a little bit hit or miss at Texas Tech hiring former Minnesota basketball coaches. I would say it worked out okay.
Tubby worked out with.
And then Coach Stallings, not so much. So I don't know. Maybe. Like I said, when the other guy asked, I haven't really thought through potential names or anything yet. So I'm a little bit scared of the last name. But I don't know. If he's got a clean track record, I guess I might be open to it. But yeah, we're I guess a long ways from that, if that's a conversation that needs to be had after the season.
How's Iona doing? Just unrelated.
Go Gales.
Oh man. Final thoughts, Kyle. We've been going for over an hour. I guess there's only so much, and we've kind of devolved into firing Mark Adams now, and I don't really want to do that. I know we're going to after every loss, but any final thoughts on tonight or moving forward, or maybe even the LSU game?
The one thing we didn't touch on was Pop Isaacs left the game and came back to the bench in a boot, which, again, I mean, the rest of the games this season don't matter in terms of postseason prospects, but you certainly hope he's okay and want him primarily to be healthy and for that not to be a serious injury, but secondarily to be able to continue to get minutes as one of the younger guys on the team. So, and then, of course, AMAC, this news broke before the game, of course. He was back in a walking boot. I don't know if he might have re-aggravated, if he was sore. But both of them back out, back in a walking boot. And so that'll be something to, of course, follow moving forward. But I think that's all I had in the way of final thoughts.
Just for those, because I didn't get to watch it on TV a lot, so I listened to the radio broadcast, which you can almost find out more about what's going on with the team through those two, through Level especially. What they said about AMAC was Level just did not sound like it was good news on Fardos, on him even coming back to play at all the rest of the year. And then for Pop, it was he's out for this game and he'll have further testing tomorrow to see exactly what happened. But I think it was just more caution more than anything tonight. Obviously, it's going to be caution the rest of the year because you're not going anywhere after the regular season's over. So that's all that I heard on the radio broadcast.
Yeah, Jeff Goodman is going to have a field day with that.
Oh, good.
Oh, my God.
I guarantee you neither of them play against LSU, or at least shouldn't. Just save them for the Big 12, especially a short turnaround on Big Monday.
Yeah.
Anyway, somebody's got to get a losing streak taken care of against LSU.
Yeah, aren't they
on a 7-game bender?
Yeah, somebody's gonna finally get in the win column. I hope it's us.
Hope so.
Man, I feel I feel bad for Barnett, Howard, and Williams. Such a great, loyal sponsor. Three outstanding Red Raiders that run a fine law practice, yeah. And they're stuck with a preseason arrangement of sponsoring these post games, which so far have not been kind to us.
Would you call 0-8 appreciate a catastrophic injury, Kyle?
Yeah, catastrophic injury to the program's national perception, I guess. I don't know if they can sue over it, but if they wanted to, they would know who to call, right? bhwlawfirm.com. Appreciate all of you for sticking with us. I know the losses aren't fun, but to me, they pass a little more easily when we get to chop it up and have some fun in the people's post game. So thank you all for joining and for your comments, questions, and hopefully we'll be back with better news next week.
We'll see.
Hey, Maddie, when we hang up, you need to show me how to do the different colored hearts on here because that's pretty cool. But yeah, Rob, that's all I got.
All right. Love y'all.
Love y'all.